Dumplin, I love you, and I'm hoping you'll make me proud. My stomach does somersaults. I don't want to embarrass her. I really don't. But, she adds, I can't have anyone thinking I'm giving you special treatment. So we're all business until Saturday night after the pageant. Right, I mutter. All business. Okay, so this place really is all business. They've got us contestants lined up outside of the banquet hall. No one is allowed to talk to each other until after the interviews are completed. Which really makes no sense, because this doesn't strike me as the type of thing you could cheat on. I mean, they pull questions from one huge list, and no one gets the same combination. After the interviews is the luncheon, and after that is when contestants are allowed to set up their dressing room spaces. And that's when shit really starts to get real. Tomorrow is dress rehearsals. Saturday morning is reserved for a light run-through before the show, which starts promptly at 7 p.m. All of us look so ridiculous. Like, we're here for a job interview, and the one requirement is that you wear one of your mom's polyester suits. I watch as girls with last names starting with A, B, and C file in and out of their interview. Some come out with broad smiles, a few are shell-shocked, and a handful in tears. It sounds horrible, I know, but a small part of me sees the girl in tears as eliminated competition. I don't even want to win, but I think there's this survival instinct inside all of us that clicks on when we see other people failing. It makes me feel gross and incredibly human. Since we're in alphabetical order, Ellen and I, Dixon and Driver, are sitting right next to each other. Every time a shoulder so much as touch, she moves an obnoxious distance away from me, like she's been electrocuted. Dixon? Willow Dean Dixon? I start a little and instinctively look to Elle. Our eyes meet for a second, and I see a slow smile linger on her lips before she catches herself and glances away. I am going to bomb. Mallory holds the door open for me.
Remember, she whispers, you never get a second chance at a first impression.
Well, that's encouraging, I murmur. The four judges, who until now were anonymous, sit in a row at the front of the room behind a long buffet table. They each introduce themselves, but I know exactly who they are. Tabitha Herrera, owner of not one but two beauty shops in Clover City. Tabitha's and the cleverly titled Tabitha's Number Two. Tabitha does everything from highlights to perms. She's the type of hairdresser with mind control abilities. You can sit down in her chair and swear that you came for bangs, but leave with a bob. And because it's part of her charm, Tabitha lets you think the whole thing was your idea. She's got huge boobs and the hair to match. When people up north think of Texas, it's Tabitha they think of. Dr. Mendez. I know little about him except that he's the only orthodontist in town. He's from Philadelphia or Boston or one of those places where people are always yelling. And he always looks a little jarred by everything. I mean, I guess if I moved to this small-ass town from Philadelphia, I'd be a little on edge, too. Burgundy McCall. I shit you not. That is her real name. No, she is not a porn star or the leading lady of a soap opera. Her parents are Texas A&M graduates. Technically, their colors are maroon and white, but I guess burgundy had a better ring to it. And she's a Miss Teen Blue Bonnet turned kindergarten teacher. She made it all the way to the statewide Miss Teen Blue Bonnet pageant and came in a second runner-up. My mom, who only ever competed in the local pageant because she had me, has never outright said she resents burgundy. But whenever she says her name, it sounds like she's eaten something too hot and is about to spit it out. Clay Dooley. Clay Dooley Ford. He is probably the richest person in Clover City. His hair is always perfectly coiffed, and his jeans are a smidge tighter than a tourniquet. His belt buckles are huge and gold and probably cost more than our mortgage. Clay Dooley is all Texas. He is the stereotype Dr. Mendez's Bostadelphian parents warned him about. He's so rich, in fact, that he has time to judge stuff like this because he doesn't make the money. He has people to do that for him. I sit down in front of them, and no one looks up except Dr. Mendez. The other three shuffle papers back and forth and murmur something about the previous contestant dodging questions. Burgundy finally glances up, and upon seeing me, one of her perfectly groomed eyebrows raises. Clay and Tabitha both have the same kind of reactions, but are more successful at masking them. It is then that I realize that I am the first of the... I'll call us the unlikely suspects. I think of all the good advice I've ever gotten in my life. Most of it is from Lucy, but nothing clicks. Nothing prepares me for this moment. So I channel my mother. If my mother were standing here in this room right now, what would she say? If she weren't running this whole show and she was just my mom, what would she tell me to do? Smile, she would say. And don't you dare sigh. I smile, so hard my cheeks hurt, and I do my best not to sigh. Willow Dean Dixon? Asks Tabitha. I nod, I smile. I don't stop smiling. Dixon, says Burgundy. You're not Rosie's daughter, are you? Yes, I say. I hear my mother. Manners. Ma'am, I add. Yes, ma'am. Clay clears his throat. Okay, let's get this show rolling. Willow Dean, he says, holding up a crisp dollar bill. If I were to give you this dollar, what would you do with it? This is a trick question. Still smiling. A dollar. What could I do with his dollar? Okay, I could give it to a homeless guy. I could buy a donut. Yes, sir, please. I would love to buy a donut with your dollar. No, no. I've got to think bigger. Charity feels too obvious. I would go to the dollar store and buy a box of pencils. Then, on the morning of the SATs, I would roam the halls, selling them to the slackers. I mean, the students who forgot their pencils. For $3 apiece. It's quiet for a moment, and then Clay lets out a hoot of laughter. Beside him, Burgundy purses her lips. And what would you do with the money? Buy more pencils, I say. She begins to scratch something down on her score sheet. And then, once I had a nice chunk, I'd donate it to charity. Or use it to buy a holiday meal for a family in need. Creativity? Check. Savvy? Check. Selflessness? Check. Tabitha smiles to herself. And I think maybe she even winks at me. Once the judges finish writing down their comments, Tabitha looks up. We have one other question for you. Define loyalty. The adrenaline is sucked from my body like a vacuum. I am not smiling. Loyalty. I take my time with each letter, trying to stretch out how long I have before I've got to give an answer. Loyalty is being there for someone. It's selfless. It's about standing by someone's side, even when you don't want to. Ellen. All I see is Ellen. Because you love them. That night when we lay in her bed, talking about the first time she had sex. It was so hard. I felt like there were nails in my stomach. But I stayed there with her. I listened to every detail because that's what you do for your best friend. I can feel her out in that hallway, thinking of me. For as angry as she is with me, I know she's sitting out there wondering how I'm doing in front of these judges. Loyalty isn't blind, even when I wish it was. Loyalty is telling someone they're wrong when no one else will. It embarrasses me to know that I told Elle she couldn't enter the pageant. Like us competing alongside each other would somehow ruin the point I was trying to make. And really, with her, I am only stronger. I am the best possible me. I think that my whole world has cracked into all these little pieces, and the only way I can go about fixing it is one shard at a time. For me,
The first piece is always Ellen.
Chapter 56. They serve us barbecue for lunch. I think that maybe lunch is some secret component of our final score, because there is no higher achievement for a Southern woman than the ability to eat barbecue and walk away stain-free. After lunch, we all have to sit through a keynote from Ruth Perkins, the 78-year-old former Miss Teen Bluebonnet, who decides not to use the microphone because it gives her feedback in her hearing aid, which means we're all left smiling and nodding as she talks at a secret-telling level of volume. After a while, there's this awkward moment where she's waiting for applause, and none of us can tell if she's done talking. We eventually clap, and Mrs. Clausen takes the stage to thank her and offer her a bouquet of flowers.
"All right, ladies," she says into the mic. "None of you can leave until you've had your picture made for the paper. There are chairs along the wall, so sit in the same alphabetical order you were in today. You've got 5 minutes to touch up your faces."
I turn to Hannah, who sits next to me, and bare my teeth. "Anything in my teeth?" I ask. She shakes her head.
"Me?"
"Nope." We part ways and go to our respective chairs as everyone else storms the bathrooms. I wait for Elle to sit down beside me. I can't make my brain concentrate on what I might say, but I'm going to talk to her. I have to. She plops down in the chair next to me and licks her thumb as she tries to rub off a barbecue stain on the lapel of her blazer. "I bet they can take it so the stain's out of the frame," I say. "Or Photoshop it." She keeps on with the stain, diligently making it worse and worse, but says nothing. They begin to call us one by one, and we scoot up a chair each time they do. With two girls ahead of me, I say, "I don't want us to be mad at each other anymore." I wait for her response. We move up a seat. "I was wrong." We move up one more seat. "I was really wrong, and I can't do this anymore. I can't not talk to you every day. Please don't be angry with me."
"Willow Dean," calls Mallory.
I glance back to Ellen before standing up. She'll crack soon. She has to.
"Willow Dean?"
"It's not that easy."
Elle's voice scratches, like she hasn't spoken in days. "We're turning into different people. That doesn't mean we're not good for each other. I think the parts of me that are built on memories made with Ellen are some of my favorite parts of myself. I'm sorry," I tell her. "I was stubborn." I sit down on the small stool in front of the backdrop. My mom stands behind the photographer. She motions with both her pointer fingers like she's pulling a smile across her face. I pull in one deep breath and beg myself to smile. Smile, smile, smile. Ellen sits there against the wall, still rubbing her barbecue stain in circles. I don't smile. After photos were released to set up our backstage dressing areas, the community theater downtown was designed with the pageant in mind, which means the women's dressing room is 4 times the size of the men's. Each seat is labeled. I find my name on a piece of paper taped to a small stretch of mirror. Except over my name in black marker in all caps is Dumplin, scrawled in a hurry like someone had to say my name and couldn't resist. I look right and then left to see if I can spot the culprit. Ellen plops all her stuff down next to mine. I see her name taped to the mirror. We're in alphabetical order again. In the reflection, her gaze catches mine. She digs through her purse for a minute before coming up with a pen. Stretching over me, she reaches for the paper with my name on it. I watch as she scribbles my name, sans Dumplin, on the back, tears the piece of tape off, and reapplies it before sticking the sign back on the mirror. "Thanks," I say. She sits down on the stool next to me.
"It's just a word. Doesn't mean anything unless you let it."
She turns to me. Her eyes don't quite meet mine.
"But if it hurts you, it hurts me."
My whole body relaxes, but my chin trembles.
"I'm so sorry. I'm sorry," she says.
I shake my head.
"No, no, I am."
She looks up then,
notices my quivering chin and takes my hand. The room begins to swell as more girls file in. "Come on," she says. I follow her, and she holds my hand and leads me to a beat-up leather love seat a few feet from the stage manager's desk. We sink into the sofa, and without making a big deal of it, Elle swings her legs over mine.
"Okay, talk."
"Okay. I got mad at you for entering the pageant. And then you got mad at me for being mad at you. And then I stayed mad at you. And then you stayed mad at me." I shake my head. "I know this was a long time coming. We've been drifting." She nods. "It scares me. I don't want to feel apart from you. But maybe we're not supposed to do everything together. Maybe we're supposed to have some space." It's hard to accept. I look for all the right words. "I want to see you be happy and make new friends, even if they're people like Callie. I want to not be jealous of you." I've never said it out loud. I think I've even been scared to let myself think it. But I know it's true the second it leaves my mouth. I don't mean jealous in a weird stalkery way. But sometimes I think our lives are moving at different speeds, and it's hard not to feel like you're gonna lap me. She laughs, and it sounds like a hiccup. "I'm not lapping you anytime soon. And if this is about sex, I loved him, okay? But know that there's been a learning curve." Her shoulders bounce as she adds, "Maybe I'm jealous of you sometimes, too. You don't care about people like Callie or any of the girls I work with. But I need them to like me. It's the kind of thing that keeps me up at night. I don't even think they're that cool. My mind keeps this kind of tally of how many people like me, and I care. I don't want to." I smile, and the knot in my chest unwinds a little. "You're my best friend. Even over these last 2 months, it's always been you. And you never treat me any different. Not like other people do sometimes. And I know I'm good at being who I am. I'm good at saying, 'This is me, back me up or back the fuck out,' you know? But, oh Christ, there's so much I haven't told her. I start at the beginning. But I met a boy over the summer. Beau. Private school boy. At work. And we kissed."
"You didn't tell me?"
She smacks my arm.
"The hell, Will?"
I shake my head. "I know, I'm sorry. But we kissed some more, and then it just kept going."
"Oh my God. You had sex with him. Was it amazing? I'm still mad at you for not telling me."
I laugh. No, we didn't have sex. But I liked the way being with him made me feel. My head feels like a spool of thread unwinding. "But then, did you ever get freaked out when Tim would touch you? Like, at first?" She drops her head against my shoulder.
"Shit, yeah, I did. He touched my waist or a spot of acne on my chin or something, and I clam up like a total psycho."
The warm relief of recognition spreads through me. "That's what happened when Beau touched me. Like, I felt straight up drunk when we would kiss. But then he'd touch my back fat or my hips, and I would totally shut down. I can't believe you hid this from me." Her voice is soft.
"I should be so pissed at you."
I know. I'm sorry. But, like, all of this was happening, right? And you told me that you and Tim were going to start having sex, and it made me feel like I might explode. It wasn't all jealousy. It was more that I felt young and inexperienced. And I couldn't, and kind of still can't, imagine myself letting someone else see me like that.
Oh, Will. And that pissed me off. It was like I was losing you. But I felt so gross about myself at the same time. It all made me so mad because I didn't want to be one of those girls who felt bad about themselves because of some guy.
She sits up, and I lay my head in her lap as she pulls her fingers through my hair. I tell her about every little thing. About Beau at the mall, and how he didn't tell me he was changing schools. And Mitch, and the dance, Halloween, going back to Harpies, Beau. I tell her all about Beau, and how she'd like him so much, and how he wants to be my boyfriend. He wants to put this label on us, I tell her. And you know, we won't even make it one day at school without being ridiculed. He doesn't get that.
Listen, she says. Lots of people are assholes, okay?
I won't lie to you there. But look at Tim and me. He's way shorter than me. You think people don't laugh at us? They do.
It's true. But until this moment, it's not anything I've even heard Al mention.
But you don't always get to choose who your heart wants. And if we always did get to choose, I choose Tim. I choose him every time. So you gotta think. A relationship is between two people. All those assholes at school are bored spectators. You and Beau behind the dumpster at Harpy's. That was y'all's hearts talking. But you and Beau dating, being exclusive, that's your head. Your heart is all in, but that doesn't mean you don't get to choose. From what it sounds like, he's already made his choice. It's so easy, I think, to say so in my head, even out loud. But doing? Taking his hand and saying, I deserve this. We deserve this. That's terrifying. I was scared y'all broke up, I say. You and Tim? I saw you crying in the hall the other day. Her hand stops for a minute. She sniffs. My parents are fighting again. My dad went and spent the night on Uncle Jared's couch. He's back. But I don't know. This feels like it might be it. God, Al, I am so sorry. I wanted to tell you so bad, but I was being stubborn and dumb. No, I should have gone up to you when I saw you there. It's okay, she says. This isn't the first time. Some things just can't be fixed. Not forever. The thought makes my heart flinch. I sit up and we stay put for a little while, entwined like a set of cats.
Chapter 57. I end up hanging out with Ellen and Tim for the rest of the afternoon. As we drive up to my house, I see that Beau's truck is parked out front. Is that who I think it is? Asks Al. He stands outside my front door with a huge metal toolbox at his feet. Tim pulls into my driveway, and Al hops out so I can drag myself out of the back seat of the Jeep. I walk across the yard and can feel Ellen at my heels. I turn abruptly.
What are you doing?
I ask her.
I want to see this.
No, nope. You're going home.
Call me, she says. Do not forget.
Okay. She hugs me, and I hold on for a second too long, hoping that part of her will seep into my skin. I wait for Tim to pull away before I take the last few steps to Beau. Is this a home invasion or something? He whips around like he hadn't heard Tim drop me off. A brown leather tool belt hangs low on his waist.
I swear this isn't as creepy as it looks.
It looks pretty creepy.
His smile is steady, yet nervous.
I was out with my dad, helping him with a few jobs when we ran into your mom at the gas station. I guess they went on a few dates in high school.
I laughed. So not surprised.
She mentioned your front door again, and my dad. Well, actually, I volunteered to come fix it. I hope that's not weird.
I sit down on the stoop, and he does the same. Kinda weird. Unspoken words that I don't know how to say weigh against my chest. Did you get it fixed?
It was a really easy fix, actually. I kind of can't believe you guys left it like that for so long.
I pull my knees into my chest. You don't have to answer a broken front door. He reaches back behind me and turns the knob. The door swings wide open.
No excuse now.
Yeah. I point to his neck. What's up with the necklace? He pulls the chain out from under his t-shirt to reveal a small medallion.
St. Anthony, he says. Supposed to help you find lost things.
What are you looking for?
I don't know.
He tucks the necklace back behind his collar.
I think maybe I found it. But then some days I think it found me.
I nod. There's some kind of peace that comes with knowing that for every person who is waiting to be found, there's someone out there searching.
Willow Dean?
Yeah? He stands and reaches for his toolbox.
You look like an insurance adjuster.
Chapter 58. I wake up to find that Mom has slid a copy of the paper beneath my door. I unfold it and find my face there, right in the middle of the crease. The headline reads, Clover City's Miss Teen Bluebonnet, putting names with faces. The entire front page is tiled with our headshots from the previous day. Beneath our pictures are our names, ages, favorite foods, and our definitions of Clover City in one word. I'm guessing my mom wasn't given a first look at this before it went to print. But either way, there I am. My not-smiling face. At rehearsal, we all sit in the auditorium for a long time while waiting for the lighting to be perfected. Miranda Solomon, God's gift to Clover City Community Theater, turns around in her seat and explains to me, Elle, Hannah, Amanda, and Millie that half of final rehearsals is always spent sitting around, waiting for the techies to get it right. She shrugs. That's the biz. When she stands to go to the bathroom, Elle turns to me with her shoulders hunched up and her voice high. That's the biz. Callie sits a few rows behind us with another girl I recognize from Sweet 16. I'm actively trying not to look smug, but it's not easy. Other than that, things are alarmingly quiet. Pageants are the perfect recipe for drama. You have to look perfect. You have to be perfect. And on top of being perfect, you have to be the best at being perfect. The nerves here are almost palpable, especially Millie's. She bounces her legs so hard that I can feel the vibrations 3 seats down. Ellen turns to me. So are you really doing those magic tricks? I love you, but those were pretty sketch. Well, it's not like I really have an option now. I don't know, she says. I guess if you cared about getting DQ'd, you don't. The thought of doing something completely different hadn't even occurred to me. I don't even really have anything I could do. She sits for a minute, lost in thought as she chews on her hair. Then she gasps and whispers in my ear. It only takes 3 words for the idea to take me. She leans back, waiting for my response. I can picture it so perfectly. There's so no way I'm winning this thing, so I might as well go out in a blaze of glory. I could even...
Millie Renee Michael Chuck!
A voice from the back of the theater crows. The vibrations I felt for the last half hour stop as Millie's entire body freezes. I crane my neck to see her mom storming at the top of the aisle. Her dad isn't far behind. I whip around and elbow Hannah in the gut. What is going on? I whisper, yell at her. Millie squeezes past each of us to meet her mom in the aisle. She holds her chin out straight, inhaling and exhaling measured breaths. It takes a second for Hannah's eyes to adjust.
Oh,
she says, and sort of laughs into her fist. Oh, what?
I lied, she says. I definitely lied.
Everyone's watching now, including the tech guys. Are you kidding me? I ask.
Millicent, says Mrs. Michael Chuck. You lied to us, to our faces.
Tears brim at the edges of her eyes. And it becomes very obvious that she is not wearing waterproof mascara. Millie's dad settles behind his wife, his arms crossed.
You went behind our backs after we decided not to sign the release form. Why? Why would you do that? Is this true?
My mom stands on stage with a clipboard tucked beneath her arm. With her fists curled at her sides, Millie turns to my mom and says,
I forged my mother's signature.
Her face crumbles for a second like she might cry. She looks back to her parents.
But you were wrong.
Her voice softens.
I know you want to protect me. I know that, but sometimes I just need you to support me.
My mom frowns.
Let's take this out into the foyer.
I watch as Millie makes the trek up the aisle with my mother close behind her. Standing up, I climb over Elle's long legs.
Where are you going?
She asks. I have to help her, I say.
I jog up the aisle and push the door open wide enough for the entire auditorium to hear my mother say, I'm sorry, but we cannot allow you to compete without parental consent.
The door swings shut behind me.
Millie has to compete.
Millie's parents turn.
She's worked so hard, I tell them. And she's not fragile. She isn't. She's got this thick skin you don't even expect. Everyone in this room, even the girls with the long legs and the silky hair, knows what it is to be teased. Millie and I know. Amanda and Hannah. Ellen.
I motion to my mom.
Even my mom knows. But we can't walk around scared all the time. That's no way to do things.
Millie reaches for my hand and squeezes tight.
I really want this, she says. I've dreamed of being in this pageant for as long as I can remember. There's nothing in the rules that says fatties need not apply.
Her mother flinches at the word and discreetly wipes away a tear.
The only thing keeping me from this, Mom, is you.
Mrs. Michaelchuk looks to the huge pageant banner hanging above the auditorium doors, and then to my mom, who offers a faint grin. Her husband takes her hand. She turns to Millie and nods. Side by side, we walk back into the auditorium where all the other girls have so obviously been eavesdropping. A few contestants turn to give Millie smiles of encouragement as we take our seats. Ellen takes my hand, and then Millie's, who then laces her fingers with Amanda's. I turn to my other side to face Hannah, palm up. She takes a deep breath before taking my hand. A bond bigger than any crown pulses through the five of us, and for the first time since the start of this pageant, I know it's me who has the upper hand. When we finally do rehearse, it's a mess. None of us do our talents. There isn't time. Kelly slips on the ramp during the opening number. All our cues are off. There are spills and tears and even some blood. In the end, it is exactly what I expected. At home, my mom is sunk deep into the couch with a bottle of cheap champagne just like she is every year. At this point, there's nothing left to be done. And if there is anything, it's too late to make the effort. All she can do is let the glitter fall where it may. Her words, not mine. I sit at the kitchen table with a huge cardboard box, a few bottles of craft paint and scissors. Somehow I've got to create a prop for the opening number. I've barely given any thought to my assigned landmark, Cadillac Ranch, since that day at dance rehearsal. Normally I just blow off this kind of thing as dumb pageant fluff, but it's actually kind of cool. Sure, Texas has all the famous landmarks that everyone's heard of, but we have all these unknown gems too. Like the Marfa Lights, or Jacob's Well, or Dinosaur Valley, or even the Prada sculpture a few hours from here. I guess Cadillac Ranch falls into that oddball category. It's so perfectly Texas, and yet, completely beyond the stereotype. Cadillac Ranch is this public art installation up in Amarillo. All these old caddies are half buried nose first in a row off the side of the highway. Their paint jobs have long since faded, and visitors are encouraged to spray paint the cars. So, yeah. I have no idea how to make a decent prop that says, I am so obviously Cadillac Ranch. My mom wanders in for some ice. Yes, she drinks her champagne with ice.
Is this for some school project? You've got to get some beauty sleep tonight, Dumplin'.
She's going to kill me for not having done this sooner. It's for my, opening number prop. She sits down beside me. Oh, dear. I nod.
Okay, she says. Okay, we can do this.
She glances at the paper with my assignment.
Cadillac Ranch.
I watch as she stands and grabs a plastic tumbler from the cabinet. She pours a few sips of champagne and hands it to me. I take the cup, but say nothing. I don't want her to change her mind for some reason.
You think your waist can fit in that box?
I eye it for a second and take a sip of champagne. It bubbles in my chest. Yeah.
Run out to the garage for me and grab a spool of that white elastic, the glue gun, and my box of spray paints.
I come back with the requested items. and she's already at work on the box, slicing through it with an X-Acto knife.
Dumplin', you're going to have the best damn prop in that opening number.
My whole body buzzes with satisfaction as I take another sip. A few hours and one bottle of champagne later, I say, Mom?
Yeah, Dumplin'?
That was good of you to let Millie compete, even though she lied. She finishes off her glass.
She's a good girl, a sweet one, with a good smile.
I wait for her to say something about her size and how she's at a disadvantage, but she only opens another bottle. We paint a white base coat in silence, and when it's almost dry, something cool slats against my cheek. I drag my finger against my skin. Paint.
Oh, no, you didn't, I say, and flick what's on my fingers onto her nose. We laugh, hysterically, like the kind of laughing you can't stop, the kind that hurts.
I think I'm drunk. I know my mom is, but I feel good.
And who needs beauty sleep when you've got champagne?
When we're finally done at 1 in the morning, we leave the kitchen with the table covered in randomly spray-painted newspaper pages and stray pieces of cardboard. Riot hops up onto the table and sniffs out our finished project. His tail whips and licks against our little cardboard Cadillac covered in spray paint. I try it on. It sits suspended from my shoulders with elastic and hangs right around my waist. It's so damn ridiculous. It's so damn perfect. Before we go to bed, I open the front door. The street is quiet and dark. Standing here from this exact vantage point, my entire house feels new with possibilities. My mom flicks the hallway light off behind me. I close the door and lock the deadbolt. In bed, I text Ellen a list of all the things I'll need for my talent tomorrow. Magnificent, she replies. The champagne still streaming through my veins lulls me to sleep. Magnificent indeed. Chapter 59. Ellen.
It is the day of the show, y'all. It is the day of the show.
Elle's text message is the first thing to make me smile. But I wake up with this bout of uncertainty. Did last night really happen? I look down at my hands and see the speckled flakes of dry paint there. We have a few hours before we have to leave, so I take my time scrubbing my whole body and pushing bobby pins into my hair until I fashion some sort of updo with my bangs swept across my forehead. Carefully, I paint my nails a deep purple. I open my closet to make sure there's nothing else I need. Hanging there front and center is the red dress my mom bought me. I push the plastic cover up and hold the dress out by its hem, studying the sheen of the fabric. My mom knocks on my door before letting herself in. I slam the closet door shut. She's all made up, ready to play glamorous hostess for a day.
Time to go. I'll be in the car, she says.
Her head tilts to the side.
Your hair. It looks good.
She closes the door before I can say thank you. Perching on the edge of my bed for a moment, I reach for the magic eight ball and shake it hard. It is decidedly so. I open the closet door. The dressing room is a haze of hairspray. Like, seriously, I have to breathe through my nose or risk swallowing fumes. The counters are full with makeup, flowers, teddy bears, Vaseline, and energy drinks. Girls run through their talents, singing to themselves as they apply lipstick, counting out their dance routines as they spray their hair, reciting monologues as they coat their lashes with mascara. I barely even have time to absorb anything. I spot Millie toward the back of the dressing room. Her hair. It is huge. Huge enough to have its own solar system. Seriously, she's got at least an extra 5 inches on her, not including heels. She smiles and waves. Sitting in front of my mirror is a small bouquet of sunflowers wrapped in tissue paper and twine, a single red rose, and a bottle of sparkling cider. I reach for the card stuffed inside the bouquet first.
Break a leg,
Bowen Lorraine. And stuck to the stem of the rose is a post-it note that reads, XOXO Mom. Lastly, I open the envelope taped to the bottle of cider.
I wanted to get you the real stuff, but Dale said no. Party pooper. Knock 'em dead. Love, Lee.
And Dale. I wish Lucy were here. Not to see me compete, but to see this. Because this moment feels as much hers as it is mine. I've only put on my makeup when Mrs. Clausen swings the door open and calls, 10 minutes, ladies! Ellen sits down next to me, her phone in her hand. Two perfect circles color each of her cheeks, and her too bright lipstick is smeared across her front tooth. Tim, she says, that fucker has food poisoning. Will, I don't have an escort. The whole pageant seemed like such a lost cause that it didn't even occur to me to be concerned by the fact that I didn't have an escort. I shake my head. I don't have one either. She's breathing too quickly. I forgot how anxious stuff like this makes her. Okay, I tell her. Listen, don't worry about the escorts, okay? And then lower, I add, we can escort each other. That's how it should be anyway, right? She chews on her bottom lip for a moment before nodding.
5 minutes, calls Mrs. Clausen. Time to line up, ladies.
If there's a god up there, I'm pretty sure she picked Ellen and me out from a lineup of embryos and said, them. Dixon, driver. It could not be more perfect. We stand backstage in alphabetical order, waiting for our cues. Elle got the Dallas Cowboys, so she's carrying a set of blue and silver pom-poms and wearing a matching cowboy hat. I've got my Cadillac on. Our hands are clasped so tight that they're drained of blood. I try to make myself remember the dance we've rehearsed over and over again, but I can't seem to imagine it. My mind is a maze, and I'm chasing a shadow. Becca Cotter passes Elle a tub of Vaseline.
Put it on your teeth and gums, she says. Helps you smile.
We both glance at each other and shrug before dipping our fingers in and smearing the Vaseline across her smiles. It tastes disgusting. Thanks, I tell Becca. Mallory stands a few feet in front of us with the black headset on.
Go, go, go!
We rush out past her, and the minute the lights hit my skin, my memory comes back to me. We rotate in circles so that everyone has 2.5 seconds to say their names. The song finishes and the lights cut out. I can't even process how quickly this is moving. It feels like life on triple fast forward, where everyone's voices sound like chipmunks. Next is the swimwear competition. It hadn't occurred to me that I would have no privacy when changing into my swimwear. But here we are. And privacy there is not. I strip down as strategically as I can, with my swimsuit half hiked up over my thighs and my skirt bunched up around my waist. For a moment, I allow myself a glance around the room. I find that I am the only person not minding my own damn business. I'm going to be perfectly honest here, and say that there are boobies everywhere, and no one even cares. I bite the bullet and rip off my shirt. After shimmying the rest of the way into my swimsuit, I tuck the red heart-shaped sunglasses Beau gave me all those months ago into my hair. I hadn't even thought twice about them until I was cleaning stuff out of my closet last week. We file into the wings, and Mrs. Clausen runs up and down the line, spraying her asses with Aquanet.
"Can't have those swimsuits riding up," she says.
I watch as Ellen walks out on stage. She's freaking out on the inside. I know it. But she's all confidence in her green two-piece and espadrilles. I know I shouldn't. But I glance down at my black sandals and my red suit stretched over my round belly. But that's not even the thing that bothers me. Everyone has one thing they absolutely hate about themselves. I could be lame and say that I hate my whole body. But what it all comes down to is my thighs. Thunder thighs, cottage cheese, crater legs, ham hocks, mud flaps, whatever you want to call them. My legs don't even look like legs. I'm pretty forgiving of the pudge, but in the rare moments spent in front of a mirror in nothing but my skin, all I see are two pillars of cellulite that carry me from place to place and rub together, creating one hellish case of chub rub. Chub rub, by the way, is fat girl talk for the most miserable inner thigh chafing of all time. Mrs. Clausen taps my shoulder, letting me know it's my turn. I pull in a deep breath and smile.
Smile, dumpling,
I hear my mother say. I may be uncomfortable, but I refuse to be ashamed. Maybe it's because I can't see the audience. Or maybe it's because no one is yelling for me to get off the stage. but my thighs survived their moment in the spotlight. I don't scurry away like I did that day at the pool. No one boos. The world doesn't end. The audience doesn't go blind. There's something about swimsuits that make you think you've got to earn the right to wear them. And that's wrong. Really, the criteria is simple. Do you have a body? Put a swimsuit on it. Amanda waits for me at the other end.
You looked super fine out there.
I squeeze her arm. Thanks. You ready for your soccer showcase? She nods. Her cheeks turn light pink.
I joined the soccer team, she says.
Did you really? Amanda grins.
I figured if I could survive this, I could limp my way onto the soccer team.
That's amazing, I tell Amanda as Ellen comes to stand beside us. From the wings, we watch as Millie takes the stage in her skirted gingham swimsuit and matching wedges. She wears huge white sunglasses and bright red lipstick, and even carries a beach ball tucked beneath her arm.
God, says Ellen. She was born for this. There's a beauty queen in that cute little fat girl.
A slow, satisfied smile melts across my face. No, I say. That cute little fat girl is a beauty queen.
Chapter 60.
Oh, sweet bastard, damn!
My brain feels like it's been pushed through a food processor.
Do all wig caps hurt this bad?
This might be a size too small, says Ellen.
I don't know. I took whatever my mom had in her dressing room.
We've commandeered the one-stall backstage bathroom to prepare for my talent. Ellen's hair is divided into two braids, and she's managed to squeeze into her clogging costume from seventh grade, though her mom had to sew an elastic band into the waist.
Okay, okay.
I breathe in through my nose, trying to ease some of the tension in my huge-ass head and close my eyes.
Put the wig on.
Ellen tugs the blonde wig on over my head.
Okay,
she says after pushing in the last bobby pin.
You're set. Take a look.
I lift my head. Staring back at me is Dolly Parton. A fat, teenage Dolly Parton.
Oh my God, says Elle. I think you might be my spirit animal.
I wait off stage. She's clogging a few beats behind the music and keeps rolling her eyes. If I weren't so nervous, I'd be laughing my ass off. We were careful to sneak me around backstage so that no one saw me, especially my mom, Mrs. Clausen, or Mallory. Elle's music ends a few seconds before she's actually done clogging, but she finishes and curtsies before running off stage.
Okay, she says. You got this.
We paid the sound guy $20 to go along with us.
Cool, he said. Beer money.
My mom steps out from the wing closest to the audience on the other side of the stage.
That was lovely, Ellen. And what a workout I bet that is.
The audience rumbles with quiet laughter.
Next up, we have Willow Dean Dixon performing a few magic tricks for us.
Yeah, getting that wig cap over my head was a pretty impressive magic trick. I walk out on stage into the spotlight, my boots clicking against the floor. My suede-fringed poncho-shaped shadow stretches out past the pool of light. My mom stands at the edge of the stage with her microphone dangling from her fingers. Her eyes are wide and her body is wound with tension. The music starts. It's those first couple chords that every person in this auditorium knows so well. I can see the judges whispering back and forth at their table with their desk lights glowing. I turn back to my mom and hold the toy microphone to my lips. Dolly's voice sings, Jolene, 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 Jolene. I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. I sink my lips to each word. I close my eyes and see every moment I've heard this song. Driving down the highway with my mom, Lucy, and Graham. The windows down, all four of us dragging our hands through the wind. Sitting in Lucy's room with her as Jolene pipes out from a record player. Laying on the cool tiles of Elle's kitchen as her mom hums and makes spaghetti. At Lucy's funeral. In Beau's truck. At the hideaway watching Lee perform. Right here on the stage. I sing Jolene. And maybe it's my imagination. But I hear a few voices out in the audience singing it back to me. It's the kind of iconic song that is bigger than geography or languages or religion. It's Jolene. The song ends and the audience applauds. For a second, I think I hear an oink, but it is soon drowned out by the cheers. The second I'm off stage, my mom yanks me by the arm. What was that? But she doesn't give me enough time to answer because she's already rushing out to announce the next contestant. Well, wasn't that a surprise? Her voice rings. I pass Callie on my way to the fitting room.
You know they're going to DQ you for not doing your approved talent, right?
It was worth it, I say, without bothering to stop. In the dressing room, I slump down beside Ellen. We've got some downtime while the talents finish up. Hannah walks past me on her way out. She holds her hand up for a high five without saying a word. After the talents wrap, there's an intermission before the formals. I help Ellen into her gown, a coral halter dress with rhinestones. She fluffs my hair back up after the wig cap had its way with me. Mrs. Clausen peeks her head in and says,
"So far, so good, ladies. 10 minutes. And Willa Dean, your mother needs to speak with you."
Blush spreads to my cheeks. A few girls ooh as I follow Mrs. Clausen to my mom's private dressing room. I knock, and before I've pulled my fist away, my mom swings the door open. She shakes her head.
"I knew you had some trick up your sleeve."
"No, Mom, that wasn't it. I didn't plan it or anything." "Well, not until yesterday, at least." She holds her unzipped Miss Teen dress up around her chest.
"You're disqualified," she says. "We can't let you finish the pageant. It wouldn't be fair."
"It's not like I'm going to win the thing," I tell her. "Why can't I just get up there and walk?"
"You broke the rules. It's the same standard I would hold anyone else to. I'm sorry, but this is as far as you get to go."
I know it's stupid. It is so dumb. But part of me is so torn up over the fact that I won't be finishing. After everything that's happened, and I'm less than an hour from completing this thing. I'm not surprised. I shouldn't be, at least. I knew that what I was doing was a disqualifiable offense. But somehow I thought she might take mercy on me. She turns around.
"Zip me up, would you?"
The zipper doesn't strain nearly as much as it did the last time, but it's just not... "Mom, this is as far as I can get it," I say with finality. There's still a good 4 inches to go, and I can pull as hard as I want, but that zipper is not moving up any further. It's science. She whips around and looks over her shoulder in the mirror.
"That's not possible. No, no, I tried it on earlier this week. I've been doing my P-lates and spin classes."
I think she's about to fall apart. And if my mother falls apart, so will this whole pageant. "Okay," I tell her. "Listen, we're going to make this work."
2 minutes,
calls Mrs. Clausen on the other side of the door. Sweat prickles at my mom's temples.
"Stay here."
I run. I haul ass through the backstage into the wood shop where they make the sets. Saws, drills, nails, hammers, screws, stepladders, wrenches, pliers. I fill my arms with anything that looks like it might help. When I race back into the dressing room, my mom is near hysterics.
"Dumplin', I have to get myself into this dress. I've worn it every year since I won. People are expecting me in this dress. It's tradition."
"Turn around." I drop everything on the counter.
"Everyone'll know."
She's on the verge of sobbing.
"No," I tell her. "No, no crying. You are not fitting into this dress, okay? It's not going to happen."
She whimpers. "But that doesn't mean we can't make it look like you do." I grab 2 giant alligator clamps that I've seen the tech guys wearing on their shorts, kind of like hairdressers with their hair clips. They use them for oddball stuff, like holding back wires or keeping wood together while it's being glued. "Listen, Mom, you can't turn around up there, okay? You gotta stay in one place." She nods. I slide a clamp behind her strapless bra and tuck the dress beneath it. I do the same with the other side. Her breathing eases for a moment as she notices the difference in the mirror. "See? It looks fine." She takes a deep breath and pushes her crown into her perfectly styled hair. "Okay, Dumplin'." She turns to me, her expression hesitant.
"You hate that nickname, don't you?"
I smile. "Not as much as I used to."
"I can stop calling."
"No," I tell her. "I think I've sort of embraced it." Sometimes figuring out who you are means understanding that we are a mosaic of experiences. I'm Dumplin', and Will and Willow Dean. I'm fat, I'm happy, I'm insecure, I'm bold.
Curtain!
Calls Mrs. Clausen. Mom turns back to the mirror once more. Thank you, thank you, thank you. I love you, Willow Dean. She presses her red lips to my forehead. My sweet Dumplin'.
She races out the door, and as she announces the first few contestants and their escorts, I run to the dressing room.
Beneath the counter is my duffel bag, and rolled up inside of it is the red gown my mom bought me. I apply a second coat of lipstick and slip the dress on over my head. I step into my heels and pull the straps over the back of my foot. Trying to zip the dress as I go, I run to where Ellen is in line with Becca Cotter ahead of her.
Zip me, I breathe.
She does without hesitation.
You look amazing.
I smile, still trying to catch my breath.
I know.
Ellen,
says Mallory as she double-checks her clipboard.
Where is your escort?
She turns to me.
And Will, you've been dis- I'm her escort. Ellen Driver,
my mother calls from on stage. Mallory's eyes go wide as I loop Ellen's arm through mine and walk her across the stage.
And escorting her is Timothy.
We sashay down the ramp to the front of the stage. I walk with one foot perfectly in front of the other, like Lee taught us. My mom's mouth hangs agape, but then curves into a faint smile.
And escorting her is Willow Dean Dixon.
I let go of Ellen's arm to let her take a circle at the edge of the stage, and then we walk backstage again. We watch together as everyone takes her turn. Amanda with her older brother. The laces in her clunky shoes match her dress. Millie's idea, of course. Malik is a perfect gentleman as he crosses the stage with Millie on his arm. And, of course, Hannah. Hannah with Courtney Gans. Courtney is one of those great names that could be a guy's name. But in the case of Hannah, it is not. Her escort, Courtney, who I'm guessing is from out of town because I've never seen her before, wears her blonde hair slicked back into a neat bun. It complements her fitted tux nicely. And best of all, Hannah, in her black slip dress, combat boots, and no makeup, isn't breaking a single rule. We all sashay, the toes of our heels leading our hips side to side, just like Lee taught us. Hannah exits stage right where all of us wait for her. Courtney kisses her cheek before saying, "I'll meet you outside later." Once Courtney's out of earshot, Ellen guffaws and slaps Hannah on the back.
"You are the goddamn devil!"
It's dark, so I can't be sure, but I'm nearly positive that Hannah blushes. I stand on the sidelines, watching the rest of the pageant. I watch the Q&A session as some girls surprise me with almost profound answers, while others stumble over their words. Amanda tells a horrible knock-knock joke that has the judges rolling. Millie is cute and sweet with her infectious giggle. Hannah is dry as always, but leaves the audience deep in thought. Donna Lufkin has left her gardening clogs at home. She wears a plum-colored pantsuit and waits in the wings across from me, guarding the crowns. My mom stands there in her little spotlight, not moving, like she's got a stiff neck or something. She looks beautiful. And not just from the front. Even with all the hardware holding her dress together in the back, she is lovely. This moment, it is the truest representation of my mom I have ever seen. I guess sometimes the perfection we perceive in others is made up of a whole bunch of tiny imperfections. Because some days, the damn dress just won't zip.
Chapter 61.
I stick around long enough to hear that Millie, our little Millicent, is second runner-up. She holds her bouquet of roses and gives the perfect beauty queen wave. I don't stay for the crowning of the winner. I don't need to. As I'm walking out to the lobby with the bottle of sparkling cider from Lee and Dale clutched in my fist, I see Mitch standing around with a bunch of guys from the team. They won their game last week, so they're going to state on Thanksgiving Day. It's Patrick Thomas who notices me first.
"Back for more?"
he asks.
"Couldn't handle getting dumped?" Mitch shakes his head, his expression resigned.
She's not the one who...
I lift my hand to stop him.
No one thinks you're funny, Patrick, I tell him.